TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by wolves.
Hello and welcome in. And we have real basketball. Real basketball will be played tonight. There will be a real basketball game played that counts in the standings tonight in Toronto, Canada. And one in Los Angeles, California. Manny Hill, it's back.
It's back, baby.
Real basketball.
I've said it multiple times this offseason, Danny. This has been like the most excited I've been for an NBA season in a really long time.
No more of that fake stuff.
Yep.
No more training camp. No more reading into Andrew Wiggins' new haircut, which he did get, and he does look good. I saw him today at practice.
Okay.
Nice haircut.
So it's not, he's not doing the cornrows anymore?
No, he cut his hair. It's shorter. It's not like all the way down. It's a little puffy still.
Okay.
But he cut his hair. The cornrows are gone. The afro is not there.
Cat's got a new hairstyle too.
Cat's been changing his, Robert Covington, Jordan Bell, they all seem to have the same hairstyle right now.
Okay.
But we're done talking about that because we've got real basketball tonight. The Wolves obviously play tomorrow in Brooklyn and then they play Friday in Charlotte. Home opener Sunday against Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat at Target Center. Like their first seven games are all against Eastern Conference opponents, which is really strange and odd, but it is what it is. So what I wanted to do today with you, Manny, is I want to dive into our season predictions. Who are we going to – I want to start with the Wolves. You know, Wolves record, team MVP, obviously, I think is going to be Karl Towns. So we're not going to answer that one because that's the most obvious answer in the history of podcasting that we could give. So we're going to avoid that one. That's a consensus, Karl Towns. But things like most surprising player, most disappointing player, reason for optimism, reason for pessimism that we think is going to transpire over the course of the season – but I want to start with where do we think this team's going to finish with record-wise? Do you have an 82-game sample size prediction for what their record's going to be when we wake up on April 10th or whatever day the season ends this year?
I will go 36 wins. 36 and 46.
You're on the other side of this battle than me. On the over. The total set by our friends out in the desert is at 35.5, which I do think is an attainable number. But I'm firmly on the under. Why are you at 36?
I think because of Karl Anthony Towns. I think that with Cat being at worst a top 12 player in the NBA right now, I think that is going to account for a lot of wins for this team this year. And I think the way they use him will obviously depend on that. And I think they're going to feature him a lot. I think they're going to try and make him as an efficient offensive weapon as they possibly can, whether it's three-point shooting or putting him down on the low block. And I think that's going to help this team just on its own. I think Karl's production is going to give them on the high end of, you know, the over-under what Vegas had for them this season.
Sure. I'm on the under. I'm still deciding on what exactly I want to predict. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing this in a column for either later tonight or tomorrow. I'm somewhere between 31 and 33 wins for the Wolves.
Okay.
I don't think they hit that 35.5 number that Vegas set for them. And partly because I think that this is going to be a team that's not in contention come the trade deadline. They're going to be a team that's going to be out of the playoff picture. And that's really not through, I mean, part of, yes, they're not a playoff team. Like, they're just not good enough, quite frankly. But the Western Conference is so stacked that they're going to be further out than a team with their record normally would be, I think. So because of that, I think that the team we see in the second half of the season for the Wolves could be greatly different than the team that we see in the first half of the season. And that's a team that could cost them wins. They could be worse in the second half because there are assets that if they play well in the first half of the season, Gerson Rosas and company decide to trade for draft assets or other future considerations that could help this team down the line, but it might set them back a couple of wins this year. I think that's a very real possibility.
It could be a guy like Jeff Teague getting traded in February, if he's playing well enough.
If Travion Graham comes out and shoots the ball well during preseason, or not during preseason, but early in the season, I think he's a guy that could be a valuable asset to somebody because you can never have enough wing depth. He's a good defender. And if he shoots the ball well, I think that he could be a good pickup for a team that is contending. So I do think that that matters a little bit, and you have to take that into account. I'm not sure how many of these predictions, the data-driven ones, like 538 and all those, the scientific models, I'm not sure how much I trust those here just because I don't think it takes those types of things into account. So I'm going to go under. I'm probably going to say 32-50, I think, is where I'm going to end up with this team. And listen, they've got more talent than most 50-loss teams.
Yep.
I truly believe that. And they've got the best player in the NBA that's going to be on a 50-loss team. I believe that wholeheartedly. But I just think that with where this team is at and with what the future looks like, this is going to be a necessary step for them.
And we've talked, too, about how brutal the start of the season is for them schedule-wise. Mm-hmm. And that could put them behind the eight ball just as far as trying to get to the mark I have them at 36 wins. That, you know, you start at Brooklyn tomorrow night. You got Miami coming here for the home opener on Sunday. Then you're at Philadelphia. You're at, you know, Washington isn't very good, but that could be a tough game for them travel-wise. Then they got the Bucks at home. I mean, they're going to get some tough matchups at the start of the year that could put them behind the eight ball. It's possible they could be looking at like a 3-7 or 2-8 type of start, even though the team might be playing decent and competing in some of these games, but just ultimately falling short in a lot of them.
And Manny, I think that because of the way this team is situated, once they get behind the eight ball and with the schedule, I'm not sure they ever get out from behind it. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's really through no fault of their own, but I just think it's the way that things could be for them. It could be the unfortunate reality of the 2019-2020 Minnesota Timberwolves is behind the eight ball.
Yeah. I'm totally with you. It could be an interesting thing, and just to see how they handle maybe getting off to a rough start. I mean, every team over the course of a season has a rough patch. There's one of their few rough patches during the course of the season might be at the start of it, and we'll just see how they respond to it.
And one of the more underrated difficult things I do think about this team in terms of just the outlook is schedule-wise, yes, the Western Conference is always tough, but I do think that because of where the West is at and the fact that the Wolves never have a homestand longer than three games,
yeah, that's gonna
is
be tough.
Something that I do think is not good for them. Because if you do incur one of those rough patches that you go through, you don't get a week at home or 10 days at home to figure things out in ways that some teams are able to use that. You're, for the most part, they're playing one or two games at Target Center, then they're hitting the road for two or three. Mm-hmm. One or two back or three back. I believe they have six homestands of three games, but none four games or longer, which is a little ridiculous, but I think it's something that's going to be counterproductive for them.
Isn't there like a five or six game
they have
road
a
trip
six
too,
game
at some
road
point?
Trip in March. The second half of the season. I believe it ends in Utah, and it's going to be brutal.
Yeah, it's in March.
It includes Portland, Utah, Phoenix, Houston, I want to say.
Oklahoma City. I'm looking at the schedule now. Oklahoma City, San Antonio. Yeah, that's going to be a brutal stretch. That's in basically, they're going to be on the road for most of the month of March, basically.
And I do think that the roster will look different then as opposed to what it does now. And Gerson Rosas has not made that quiet. Like, he's talked about the fact that they are always looking to improve through any avenue possible. If they think that it's a way for them to get better, they're going to attempt to get better that way. So I think that the roster could look different by then, too. This isn't going to be the same team in March that it is now.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about how obviously their playing style is going to be drastically different from what it was the last couple of years under Tom Thibodeau. And right now, with that playing style, they don't exactly have the right pieces in place to play that type of style efficiently. They're still going to play that way, but they don't have the right pieces in place to play that way efficiently. And so Gerson Rosas is not going to be afraid to make moves to try and mold this roster in the way that they want to play.
No, he certainly is not going to be scared to do that. All right, Manny, who do you think is going to be the biggest positive surprise on the 2019-2020 Timberwolves?
It's kind of a lazy pick, but I think Jared Culver is going to be really good as a rookie.
I do, too. And I asked Gerson Rosas about him this morning, and he talked about just how impressed they are with his work ethic, with everything that he does behind the scenes, and how badly he wants to be great. And you do have a lot of guys that are like that, but I do they're at the very least making it seem like it is to an above and beyond type of extent with him. I've got my worries about his outside shot.
Sure.
There's a hitch in his shot. I'm not sure when or if that's going to get better, but it seems like he does everything else at a really high level, and that's important for this team. If he can step up and be the second best player on this team from the get-go, it changes the equation for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. His development is going to be so huge for the future of this franchise and where they go. And, you know, depending on the type of player he turns into, you know, if he can turn himself into an all-star caliber player and you pair that with Karl-Anthony Towns, then you have a team that 3-4 years from now could be really contending if, as long as he continues to ascend and Cat continues to be great. You know, that you have something, you'll have something cooking there. And I like his upside. I like the little bit. I haven't watched a ton of preseason, but the little bit that I have seen, I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. I agree with you on his shot. That's going to need some work. But I think he is going to really turn some heads as a rookie. He's not going to be the rookie of the year, but I think as a first-year player, he's going to be really, really rock solid.
No, and my I think my pleasant surprise is going to – I'm going to go in a different direction. I think it's going to be Shabazz Napier. I think he's going to turn a lot of heads at the point guard position. I believe that this offense is going to be one that suits him really well. I think he's going to be really good. He's really kind of under the radar. He's small for today's NBA, but I think that he's going to have an opportunity here to do some really special things. And I'm very confident that he's going to be a big part of this team if they have success. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that we do see back on the roster next year, unless he plays himself out of the Wolves price range.
Yeah. And I mean, we just talked about how, you know, Jeff Teague could be a guy that they look to move at the deadline, and if Jeff Teague ends up getting moved, then we might see Shabazz Napier starting some games at point guard for them. He gets more minutes, more opportunities to be a floor leader and distributor, and that could give him an opportunity to really even showcase his skills even more.
And I think the fact that Jeff Teague is still kind of working his way back from his injury last year, where he's not at 100% game shape yet. He's going to play. He's going to start. That's not a question right now. But I do think that because he's still working himself back into the shape he needs to be in to play at this pace, that the minute allotment at that position is going to be fairly equal early on. And that's something that Shabazz is going to, I think, take and run with.
Yeah, and he is – what I like about Shabazz is that he has been on playoff teams before, and he's obviously at the collegiate level. He played on a high stage. He won a national – won two national championships at UConn, one as a freshman and one as a senior. The freshman, he was playing behind Kemba, but he's a guy that I think more than anything, like, he's a gamer, and he knows how to. He seems like a guy that has like the little intangible things that you need at that position, and he's not going to blow you away athletically. There's not a whole lot there in terms of just overall skill, but I think he has the intangibles to be able to help this team and you know, prove to be a valuable piece.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's someone I certainly have I'm probably more optimistic on him than most. I think that he's going to be a big part of this team. And you've brought up the Jeff Teague could be dealt angle a couple of times, and I think that's interesting for both guys that we brought up. Because if this team's going to be comfortable trading Jeff Teague in – that's not to say even if this isn't the case, they wouldn't be doing that, because they are going to look to try and gather more assets. And Jeff Teague could do that for you.
Yep.
But if they're comfortable trading Jeff Teague, I think it says great things about Jarrett Culver and how they feel about him playing a lead guard position. If that's the case, I think it's a really positive outlook for Culver.
Yeah, and he was a guy that did that a lot, especially his sophomore year at Texas Tech, and they were relying on him to be sort of the focal point of the offense, to distribute for other guys, create shots for himself. And they've tried to, the Wolves have tried to use him a little bit in that role in the preseason too. And if he can shine in that, that's big. And does that mean that he's going to be a full-on point guard long-term for his career? Not necessarily.
No.
But if he can be a guy that can be more of a combo guard type of player and just be a really good playmaker and distributor, along with being a scorer, then you're looking at a guy that could potentially be an all-star down the line.
Yeah, you are. And that's important, because you're not going to know everything about a guy off his rookie season.
Right.
But the more you can learn about him, the more you know where he fits into your future plans, the better off you're going to be in terms of team building. All right, who do you think is going to be the biggest disappointment for the Wolves this year, Manny?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, Andrew Wiggins is like the easy answer.
Oh, it's the easiest answer.
It's the easiest answer on the planet.
I don't think he will be, though.
No, I think we'll see some improvement.
I don't think he's going to be great, but I think there's going to be at least a little bit of improvement. It's going to take some, and it's not going to be right away. I don't think he's going to get off to a strong start, but at some point this year, I think it clicks for him a little bit more than years past.
Disappointment. Well, I won't predict that this is going to be a disappointment, but I think this is a little bit of a concern that it'll be a disappointment, is Jake Layman not really being much more than what he was in Portland.
Okay.
That's a little bit of a concern, and I haven't seen anything to give me that indication, but that's just sort of a concern of mine, that a guy that they gave a 3-year contract to, that they're anticipating being a big part of.
That you think the role might be a little much for him.
That the role might be a little bit too much for him, and that my fear is that he underwhelms a little bit. Now, I'm anxious to see, like, what type of player he can be and what type of player they turn him into and what he can develop into. But my concern is that, you know, we get a look at him for a year and he's just kind of like, okay, well, he's just another guy that they played.
Yeah. I don't think that'll be the case. I'm high on Jake Layman. I think he's going to be, at least for now, the team's fifth starter. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's going to be a fluid situation. It's really hard to try and figure out what this team's going to look like. I wrote for ScoreNorth.com today, what could the rotation look like tomorrow night in Brooklyn? And it's not a shot in the dark, because I'm around the team and like, I kind of have a feel for what I think Ryan's going to do, but it's an educated guess. Like, it's tough to predict. I have them playing 11 guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing of it is you look at this roster, you've got the four guys that we've talked about that are definitely going to be starters, and then everybody else is just sort of jumbled up into one sort of basket, if you will, and there's no real – there's no, like, two or three guys that you look at and say, okay, those two or three guys are clearly ahead of – these other four guys. Mm-hmm. So you know these guys are going to be in the rotation, and we know these guys are going to get this amount of minutes. It's everybody, you got the four guys, and then everybody else is kind of like, okay, well, let's just see what we have in all of these guys, and they'll sort of play themselves into their roles in the rotation.
Yeah, and that's something we're going to have to figure out. But it's when I was going through the rotation, it's like, okay, well, he has to play. He has to play. He has to play. I can't imagine him not playing. He's probably going to play. And next thing you know, I'm at 11 guys. Like, Josh Okogie was my 11th guy.
Really?
Yeah. He was the 11th guy that there was.
Huh. That's amazing.
Yeah. Crazy.
Could it be that we're just after, and, you know, I watched this team be coached by Tom Thibodeau for longer than you did, but you got a sense of it. Could it be that we're just sort of like, we're so used to just like an 8-man rotation in the regular season that the thought of like 11 guys different. Playing is like almost like a culture, shock, so to speak. But I mean, you've been around, you were around the Cavs, you were around the Bucks. I mean, those teams played more modern style of basketball.
Sure.
I mean, is that a normal thing for teams to go 11
deep? I would say 9 to 10 is. 11's a little... 11 is pushing it. Mm-hmm. It's 11-man rotations are hard to pull off when you're allowing everyone to get in a rhythm, having enough minutes, and it's especially when you kind of have to play three bigs. Like, they're going to have to play Noah Vonleh. They're going to have to play Jordan Bell. I think Carl's obviously going to play at the wing position. You've got so many guys that you have to figure out. I don't know how it's going to look. But the guy I think is going to be kind of disappointing is Noah Vonleh. I was disappointed with what I saw in the preseason from him. I think defensively, this team's really going to struggle to guard the interior when Carl's not on the floor. Mm-hmm. And Carl has made strides defensively. He looks better defensively. But he's still not a good defender.
Right.
Like, both things can be true. But when he does possess the one thing that no one else on this roster really does, and that's size.
Yeah.
Like, he's technically only an inch bigger than Noah Vonleh, but he plays so much bigger than Noah does. And I think that that's something that's going to hurt them. So my hopes are not very high for him.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, it watching them play against bigger teams will be the real telling sign of all of that. You know, when they, I mean, We talked of, again, I use Philadelphia as the easy example because they're just the biggest team in, that we've ever seen.
The history of the world.
Yeah, but it's like when they're going up against bigger teams like that, that are going to present some size advantages, you know, Noah Vonleh is going to have to, he's going to have to play because you can't have, I love Robert Covington, but you can't have him out there guarding another team's power forward if that guy is 6'10 and 250 pounds or whatever.
Covington
it is.
Lost a couple inches too.
Yeah, I saw that. He's down to 6'7, right?
6'7, yeah. It was funny to see all the it was funny to see all the height changes. And it was funny that so the Wolves sent out their official roster, mm-hmm. and Karl Towns was 7 foot on their official one. But if you go to the NBA site, Karl Towns is not 7 foot.
Yeah,
Karl Towns
is 6'11".
So I'm curious what it is there.
I was surprised to see Jeff Teague go up an inch.
Yeah.
That was kind of surprising because he's been listed at 6'2 forever.
Yeah, it was funny to see a couple guys across. I mean, we knew Kevin Durant was taller than 6'9".
Right.
And I kind of had an inkling LeBron was taller than 6'8", and partially because those guys have had that measurement since they were 18, in LeBron's case, 19, in Durant's case. So you're kind of not done growing, and
right.
you're not going to go through a huge growth spurt, most likely. If you're in the NBA at that age, you're probably done for the most part, but you're going to grow a little bit more.
Yeah.
So it was funny to see them be bumped up an inch, but it was also a little expected. But seeing a guy like Jeff T. grow, I thought was funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Well, I remember Kevin Garnett, his entire career was listed at 6'11". He came into the league when he was 18, 19 years old. And it's like, you got to about 5 or 6 years into his career, and it's like, okay, this guy's like 7'7".
Well, Garnett did that because he didn't want to be looked at as a prototypical big. He wanted to be listed as shorter.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to be forced to bulk up and say, no, you got to play five, man. You're a 7 footer.
Mm-hmm.
You got to play the five all the time.
I remember later in his career when he was playing a lot of the five, like, he would talk about like how he hated playing center too.
But the game later in his career was different than what it was earlier
sure,
in his career.
Yeah.
It wasn't, and playing center is still punishing. Don't get me wrong, but what it was for Kevin Garnett in 2012
right.
was different than what it was in 2001. Like the game just changed so much, where it was like, all right, yeah, it's kind of tough to play center at whatever weight Kevin Garnett was at those days. But once you got to 2011, 2012, or whenever, like even in the Brooklyn days, like, oh, you got the body type for it now.
Yeah.
Back then he didn't.
Yeah. Jeff Teague, 6'3", man. That's
amazing.
That was
funny.
Awesome.
it was funny to see those go up. Do you want to get to our Western Conference predictions
and
just total playoff picture, who we've got making it? Because
yeah, because this is,
I think
this
it's
is
going
intriguing.
To be fun. It's a very, very interesting outlook this year, I think, Manny.
Yeah, this thing is, I think you look at the top four or five teams, and I think you just throw all four or five of those teams into a hat and just say any of those teams could legitimately come out of the Western Conference and win the NBA title. I mean, this is as wide open as I can remember the NBA being. And I mean, I go back to the second time Michael Jordan retired from the Bulls in 98, where it really felt like things were wide open, and I don't even think back then it was as wide open as it is now.
No, this is the toughest it's been for me to try and figure out who I think is going to win a title. I'll tell you that much. This was a tough exercise for me to do.
Yeah.
But let's start with you. Give me 1 through 8 who you have making the playoffs in the Western Conference.
All right. Number one seed. This is going to be I had a tough time with this, but I'm going to roll with it. I'm going to go with the Denver Nuggets with the number one seed.
You know, Manny, I had them as
Did
the number
you?
One seed. And
there's just something about them.
I had them and I changed it. I changed it last minute. But I do like that pick. I think that they're going to be near or at the top of the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're really, really good.
This could be a situation where, you know, and then I'll get to the rest of my eight. But this could be a situation where Denver is the number one seed with like 56 wins. And then the number four seed has like 53 or 54 wins.
I don't think a team in the Western Conference, I'm not sure if a team in the Western Conference gets to 60 this year.
I can't see it.
I'm my number one seed, and I'll let you get through your eight before I go through mine, but my number one seed I do think gets close to 60. I don't know if they get it, but they are more of a more high ceiling, low floor, where I think Denver's going to be good no matter what.
Yeah. All right, so I got Denver as my number one. I got Houston number two.
Okay.
I think what happened last year, I mean, Chris Paul is obviously just, I think, cooked as a player. But I think also just the relationship between him and James Harden really kind of soured. And I think that ultimately sort of led to them just sort of being where they were.
Sure.
But I think the addition of Russ, you take out Chris Paul and you insert Russell Westbrook. And the chemistry, I think, that Harden and Russ are going to have, I think, is going to be really good going back to their days playing together in Oklahoma City. I know it was a long time ago, but...
And their games have changed.
Their games have changed. But I think when you put Russell Westbrook in a system that's going to be a little bit more structured, where you're not just allowing him to just do whatever he wants, like, it's like, Russ, there are certain type of shots that you got to take in this system. Like, you're just not going to be able to throw up whatever you want in this sort of scheme. I think it's going to help. I think it's going to help him. I think also not having the ball in his hands all the time, I think, is going to help Russ long term over the course of the season.
I agree.
I think it'll help James Harden too.
Also agree.
So I think the Rockets, I think you factor all that in, I think the Rockets are going to be that number two seed. Number three, I'll go with the Lakers.
Okay.
I wanted to put the Lakers number one because LeBron and AD, but I think what we're going to see from them is, I think we'll see LeBron sit some games to try and keep himself fresh. I think AD will sit some games, and AD might just miss some games because he has a history of getting injured.
Sure.
And I think that will keep them from being the number one seed. And I think if with a guy like LeBron, LeBron James doesn't give a damn if he's the number one seed or not.
LeBron cares that he's in the playoffs.
Exactly.
That's always been his thing. If I'm on one of the eight teams, I've got a shot. That's how LeBron feels.
Yep. So I got the Lakers three. I'm going to go with the Clippers four. I think health is going to be a big thing for them as well. I mean, Kawhi has a tendency to get banged up a little bit. Paul George obviously has an injury history.
Going to be missing at least the first 10 games of the season after having surgery on both shoulders this offseason. We don't know when he's going to be back.
Yep. So depending on how many games those guys miss might affect where the Clippers finish in the standings. But I do love what the Clippers have if they're fully healthy.
Sure.
They are going to be a nightmare defensively for just about everybody, top to bottom in that starting lineup. So I've got the Clippers at four. I'm going to go with Utah five.
Okay.
And I really like Utah a lot. And this is what's so hard because it's like you look at what Utah has and you're thinking, okay, that's like a three or four seed. But it's like then you look at the teams that I put in front of them and it's like, okay, you kind of get it. But I like Utah a lot. I think the addition of Mike Conley is huge.
I agree.
That's a major, major upgrade from Ricky Rubio at the point guard spot. And they still have the best defensive player on the planet in Rudy Gobert. So I like Utah at five. Number six, this is where it got kind of tricky for me because I'm going to go... I was debating this. I'm going to go with Portland at six.
Okay.
Go with Portland at six. You know, I mean, they're not going to have Nurkic for... Do they anticipate Nurkic playing at all?
I do think the anticipation is he'll be available at some point, but they haven't put a target date on it. I would guess not until after the All-Star break.
Injury.
Yeah.
But I'll put Portland at six, and not because I don't think Portland's gotten significantly worse. It's just so many teams in the West have sort of leapfrogged them, I think.
Sure.
That's going to push them down to that sixth spot. I will go with San Antonio at seven. I think just with Greg Popovich still being there, still have LaMarcus Aldridge, they still have DeMar DeRozan, and I think, you know, they're going to get DeJounte Murray back. That's going to be a huge addition for them. So I've got them at seven. I'll go Golden State at eight.
Okay, you're doing it.
I'm doing it. I know Steve Kerr said, I think either today or yesterday, that doesn't look like Klay Thompson's going to play at all. But you still have Steph. You still have Draymond. They're going to look different. They do have D'Angelo Russell. How that's going to fit remains to be seen. I have my doubts about how that's going to fit. But I think there's enough there to get them as the 8 seed in the Western Conference.
Okay. All right. I have the Houston Rockets winning the most games in the Western Conference.
Okay.
For a number of different reasons. I think that they got really unlucky injury-wise last year with Chris Paul missing so much at the beginning of the year. James Harden missed some time. And Russell Westbrook might not be the perfect fit with James Harden, but what Russell Westbrook does better than almost anybody is make himself available. He plays almost every night. He's and this could change. Like, it obviously could change. He could get hurt tomorrow.
Yep.
But he's going to play 80-plus games every year, and that matters. I think the Rockets are also a team that is really difficult to prepare for on a random Tuesday night in December or whenever. Like, they're easier to scheme for in a playoff series than they are the regular season. When you can't focus on just them, it's tougher to beat them. I think that they're a team that I'm not picking them to win the West in the playoffs. Like, I don't think that they come out of the Western Conference, but I do think that they win the most games in this conference because I think that that's just one of the things they have going for them. I really believe that they're going to win a lot of games. James Harden's going to lead the league in scoring again. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to just be, it's going to be a repeat of what they looked like in the 2018 season.
Yeah. I just feel like with those two guys, they're like you said, they're not the perfect fit next to each other, but I think they're going to help each other because the workload for both of them is going to be reduced significantly because of each other.
Yeah.
Essentially. And I think that's going to help both of them, I think, tremendously.
So number two for me, I have the Denver Nuggets. I think that continuity matters for them, and they have a lot of it. I think they're really talented. And the fact that they play in Denver is a big home court advantage to them. Teams having to travel there, and the air there is a real thing.
The altitude, yep.
So I do think that they're going to finish second in the West. I don't know that I would pick them to win the conference in the playoffs, but I think that they're going to win 55-ish games and have the number two seed.
Yeah, I mean, I just, Jokic is phenomenal. Jamal Murray, I think Jamal Murray has room to even get better than what he is now, and that's a scary team. The home court advantage, like you said, is a real thing. That's a team that I could see, you know, the 41 home games, that's like a 36-5 type of team in that arena. That's a really, really tough place to play.
Number three, the Los Angeles Clippers. I think they've got a ton of depth. Obviously, Kawhi is not going to play every game. Paul George obviously won't play every game either. But they have a ton of depth, and I think that the continuity other than those two stars is something that is really good for them as well. So I've got them at number three, just ahead of the Los Angeles Lakers. I think the Lakers are going to be really, really good. I do. I think that they're going to be a great team. But again, I think that this is a team that's going to win 52 games and finish fourth because the West is that good.
Yeah, I mean, I when you look at, like, Danny Green being on that mix, like, just as a shooter and a defender, and, you know, you look at LeBron, this is, I mean, Anthony Davis is probably the best player in terms of just talent that LeBron has ever played with at this point. And he's going to take so much pressure off of LeBron, I think. And, you know, you get Danny Green in that mix, spreading the floor for them. It's going to be it's going to be a lot of fun. The only question I may have about the Lakers, and this is, I think, really minor because I think the talent will overcome it, is the coaching dynamic with Frank Vogel being the head coach and then, like, Jason Kidd just staring over his shoulder. Like, you know, if the Lakers get off to, like, a 7-8 start or something for
like
whatever
Miami
reason,
did.
Yeah. Then it's like, then you're going to hear, I don't think the Lakers would pull the plug on Frank Vogel that quickly, but you're going to hear all the rumblings of, oh, is Frank Vogel the right guy?
Oh, yeah.
Jason Kidd going to be? That's the one thing that I'm sort of looking for with the Lakers. Like, if they don't get off to a 10-2 type of start, you know, are people going to start rumbling about Frank Vogel's job already?
Yeah, that could be a thing. I think that they'll be okay, though.
Yeah.
Number five, the Utah Jazz. Like you said, I really do like the addition of Mike Conley there.
Oh,
I think that they're going to win a lot of games. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is a most improved player of the year candidate. He could break out and really become a star, finally reach all-star status this year. Number six, the San Antonio Spurs. Manny, I'm not going to predict that the Spurs miss the playoffs until the year after they miss the playoffs. That's my rule. I can't do it.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I refuse.
Yeah.
I thought they locked up DeJounte Murray at a terrific number yesterday, an extension he signed.
Yep.
I can't predict it. I can't do it.
Yeah. They made the playoffs without him last year.
They won 48 games last year, and I think they're better. I think this team is better.
You still have LaMarcus Aldridge. You still have DeMar DeRozan. They're like the kings of the mid-range shot, but
it works for them.
It works for them. They're good at those shots. They have one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest coach of all time, still leading them. And I'm with you. Until they actually miss the playoffs, not counting them out of it.
Number seven, the Portland Trail Blazers. I've got them in. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. It's hard for me to say that they're going to miss the playoffs, so they're not a lock for me.
Mm-hmm.
The Nurkic injury is obviously a big question, but I do think that they end up in the playoffs. Don't have as much playoff success as last year, although a first-round rematch of that series against Denver last year from the Western Conference semis would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking at CJ McCollum, too, and I'm looking for a little bit of a bounce-back year for him. He wasn't terrible last year, but I think he could have been a lot better than what he was, and it'll be interesting to see if he sort of has a bounce back here, because they really need him to have that, especially with Nurkic being out of the fold. They're gonna need CJ to kick his game up a notch too.
And then number eight, Sacramento Kings.
You're picking the Kings over the Warriors. Boy,
I think De'Aaron Fox is gonna make a leap. Yeah, I've gone back and forth.
Him.
And you know what? I had New Orleans in this spot until Zion had knee surgery a couple days ago.
Yeah.
I had New Orleans in my eighth spot. But I've got the Kings now. I think that De'Aaron Fox is going to make a leap. Buddy Hield is the perfect complement.
That's juicy, man.
Marvin Bagley III is going to be really good this year. I think Luke Walton's a good coach for that team that got a bad rap because of what happened in L.A. last year.
They're going to play fast again.
I think that the Kings are going to be a lot of fun. I'm picking the Kings to make the playoffs and not the Golden State Warriors.
You got the Warriors on the outside looking in.
Yes. I think that I'll dive into that because their margin for error is so razor thin.
Yeah.
Where if Steph Curry misses 10 days, 2 weeks, that's enough for them to not be a playoff team.
Yeah.
Draymond Green had that awesome quote a couple years ago that there are 82-game players and that there are 16-game players. Draymond Green, at one point in his career, was both. Now Draymond Green is not an 82-game player. And that's okay.
Guy.
He's played into the finals for 5 straight years. That is a lot of wear and tear on your body, and Draymond's body is not what it once was. I don't know how D'Angelo Russell is going to be utilized. Klay Thompson might not play this year.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. Their starting small forward at this moment is Glenn Robinson III. Mm. No offense to Glenn Robinson III, but he's not a starter on a playoff team.
Former Timberwolf Glenn Robinson III.
For as talented as Steph is and as good as I think Steph can be this year, I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs.
Mm. Imagine a world without the Golden State Warriors in the playoffs.
The Golden State Warriors have the second longest active playoff streak, too.
That's amazing.
San Antonio's is at 22 years. The Warriors and the Warriors and the Houston Rockets have both made it for 7 straight seasons. And that's the second.
That's the second, and the Spurs are 22 straight years.
Yep.
Wow, man. Well, hey, you know what? I'm not going to call you crazy. I don't think it's a crazy thought.
And I've been bouncing back and forth about it for a while. Mm-hmm. But hearing Klay Thompson's potential return date getting pushed back to after the All-Star break was like, oh, maybe they're not a playoff team. And then you hear March and then you hear, well, Klay, it's unlikely Klay's just going to play at all this year. ACL injuries, and as a society, I do think that we're kind of jaded by what happens in football, because guys, it's an injury. I think in football you can come back in quicker than in basketball.
Yeah, we saw Adrian Peterson came back in like 8 months.
Yeah. You don't do the same movements in basketball that you do football. And I think it is going to be an issue. If you look at guys that have torn their ACL lately, Jabari Parker, Derrick Rose, Zach LaVine, they've all been 11 or 12 month recoveries.
Mm-hmm.
I think Klay Thompson is probably trending closer to that timeline than an Adrian Peterson type timeline. I think that matters to think about, and that's the biggest reason why. Well, and Kevin Durant leaving. Those are the biggest reasons why I don't think that they are a playoff team.
It will be interesting to see how Klay looks when he does come back, whether it's late this season or into next year. Is, as a shooter, you got to have your legs, man. And when you don't have, when you're still trying to get your legs underneath you, that's a tough thing. It'll be interesting to see how what type of player Clay is when he first comes back. I think he'll fully get back to what he was beforehand, but it might take a while. And yeah, I mean, you said it too, like their margin for error is really thin, and they're going to need Steph and Draymond to play virtually the entire season.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to miss games, I mean, we're talking 2, 3, 4 games probably at the most that they can really afford to not have those guys. And when you've gone to the NBA Finals, when you've gone to the playoffs 7 years in a row and you've gone to the NBA Finals in each of the last 5 years, you've played deep into June like that for half a decade, it's a lot of basketball, man.
Yes.
It's a lot of basketball. And I think that's actually what's going to help the Lakers, too, is that LeBron not being in the NBA Finals for the first time in almost a decade, having that extra 2 months to just sort of rest and heal the body up and coming in playing with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
It's the most rest he's had since he was 20 years old.
Yep, and LeBron has heard all in the offseason about Kawhi's the best player in the world, Giannis is the best player in the world, James Harden best player in the world, all that stuff. And I think there's going to be a LeBron James that's a little bit we know the championship is the ultimate goal, but LeBron keeps an eye on that other stuff too.
And that, Manny, is why I have picked LeBron to win the MVP this year.
Yeah.
I think that this revenge tour LeBron's going to be on, or whatever you want to call it, is going to net him his 5th MVP. That's going to be my pick there.
Should be a 6th.
Yeah, should be. Derrick Rose didn't deserve it. It should be a 6th MVP. All right, quickly run through your East playoff teams. Don't need to necessarily give in-depth explanations, but who you got?
Number one, I got Philadelphia. Number two, I've got Milwaukee. Number three was tough, but I'm gonna go with Brooklyn. Number three,
okay.
I think Kyrie being there will certainly help with that. I'll go with Boston. Number four, but I think it's gonna be a huge drop off. I think from number three to number four, and then I will go with. This is a little tougher because it's outside of that. It's just kind of a jumbled mess. I mean,
It very much so is a jumbled mess.
Yes, like Indiana, I want to say Indiana, but Victor Oladipo, like...
Don't know when he's going to play.
Yeah, you don't know when he's going to play, and that's going to be tough. I'll go Toronto. I do think Toronto, they're not a championship contender.
No.
They're not going to come out of the East at all, but I think there's enough there to... combine that with the weaker conference, that I'll put them as that 5 seed. I'll go with Miami at the 6. Jimmy Butler will help them, but I don't think that's a very good roster. Number 7, I'll go Orlando, and I'll go Atlanta number 8.
Wow,
I like Atlanta, man. I like what Atlanta's
done. Wow.
I think Trae Young's going to take a step. Atlanta's a lot of fun to watch. I think they got the right system in place. I'll go with Atlanta. I think Atlanta makes the playoffs as an 8 seed. They'll probably only win like 36 or 37 games, but that might be enough to get in the East.
All right. I am going Philadelphia, number 1 seed. I think they have the best record in the NBA. I think they win 60-plus games.
Mm-hmm.
Milwaukee, number 2. Boston Celtics, number 3. I do think that there's a significant drop-off between Milwaukee and Boston, however, for wins.
Yep.
Miami is going to be the 4 seed. The Brooklyn Nets, 5 seed. Orlando Magic, 6 seed. Toronto, 7. Indiana, 8.
Okay.
And then... MVP, I'm going LeBron James. Coach of the Year, Michael Malone. Sixth Man, Lou Williams. Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert. Most Improved Player, DeJounte Murray. Rookie of the Year, I'm going to go Darius Garland of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Ooh.
Because I don't know what Zion's going to do. If Zion misses 8 weeks, it's tough to come back from that one Rookie of the Year. You can, but it's tough. And I don't know how good Ja Morant's going to be right away. So I'll go Darius Garland there as a sleeper pick. NBA Champions... I'm going to go Philadelphia 76ers over the Los Angeles Clippers in 6 games.
Sixers, Clippers, okay. All right.
That's where I'm at.
I got you. MVP, I like the LeBron pick for MVP. I think he is going to he is going to want to wreak havoc on the league, I think.
Yes, agree.
And coach of the year, I like the Mike Malone pick. Yeah, I'll probably go Mike Malone, coach of the year.
I think that they're going to win too many games, and I think that he didn't necessarily. There were a lot of guys that deserved it last year, but I do think that the growth that they made has mattered, and I think that sustained success will be rewarded.
Okay. Most improved player, I'll go Donovan Mitchell.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that. He kind of had a so-so type of year last year. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but I think having Mike Conley in the backcourt with him will help him tremendously and take his game to another level. And yeah, so I'll go with Donovan Mitchell as the most improved player.
I like that one.
Sixth man of the year, I'll just give it to Lou Williams.
It is like the Lou Williams award.
It's a Lou Williams/Jamal Crawford award. So
I'll say if someone other than Lou Williams wins it, I think it's Spencer Dinwiddie of Brooklyn.
Okay.
That would be my second place pick.
All right. Cool. I like that. What are we
missing? Rookie of the year and who you got winning it all?
Rookie of the year. I'll go Ja Morant, rookie of the year. I think he'll play a lot. He'll have some good numbers. I think Zion, like you said, I think Zion missing time will hurt him.
Yeah, I would.
Otherwise,
have picked,
I would pick him.
I would have picked Zion as well.
Yeah, but I'll go Ja Morant. Who wins the title? I will go Lakers and Sixers meet in the finals for like the 50th time in the history of the league. And I'll take LeBron and the Lakers winning the title.
It could happen. It would not surprise me if that happens. I think that maybe next year might be the year for that. I think that LeBron in year two with a core, which this is. Last year he was in LA, but he's got a new team this year.
Yep.
Year two is when LeBron has the most success, and it wouldn't surprise me if that's next year in LA as well.
Yeah. All right.
So cool. Anything else from you, Manny?
That's all I got. I can't wait. It's starting tonight, and this is going to be the most fun I've had watching. I've always had fun watching and following the NBA, but this is going to be the most fun I've had in a long time.
Enjoy your basketball watching. I know I'll enjoy my basketball watching. Everyone listening, be sure to find us at scorenorth.com, the all-new Score North mobile app, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, whatever. Enjoy the basketball, folks. It's here.